from 104.5 The Zone. This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Crew is all here. I'm looking at Chad Withrow. He's at the top of my screen in Mount Juliet. At the bottom of the screen is Paul Kuharski in Brentwood. I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro. David Reed is the chairman of the board in Nashville. Glad you're with us. Coming up in about 10 minutes, Nate Washington will be on the show. John McClain today at 1 o'clock. Just like that, the second half of the show is here, Paul. This month has been long. This show has not felt long.
Agree. The shows generally have pace. And I'm appreciative to you guys and to my line of work that I know a lot of people probably their days are draggy. We are not.
No.
Our days are not draggy, and we hope that we help your days not be draggy. That's
no
our goal.
No off-air alarms are going to be airing on this show. I can tell you
absolutely
that.
Absolutely not. No long silence. Here, we've all got stuff to say at all times. We've all got too much to say. If anything, it's too much. Too much to say.
Chad, your thoughts.
The only thing that's going to seem too long on this show is the length of my microphone. That's a guarantee from all of us to you. And only the special guest host that joins us via Skype will be able to see my microphone in front of my mouth. The listening public. So that'll be fun.
And Joe Exotic has some thoughts about the length of your microphone.
Paul, do you think that Joe Exotic would like my microphone setup or Chad's microphone setup more?
I think undoubtedly Chad's microphone setup.
I think Joe Exotic would see me as a prime target based on my microphone. The only problem is I'm not into meth, nor am I meth curious. No, so that may be a strike against me with him.
You would be a target A for Joe Exotic and B for all of his Tigers.
That's true.
Yes.
Very much true. Guys, quick local story just now breaking at the top of the hour. We talked about this yesterday with Austin Price of VolQuest.com. Walker Merrill, who is a physical freak, an athletic freak at Brentwood High School, a wide receiver, just committed to Tennessee. He had over 20-plus offers from LSU, Ole Miss, South Carolina, Vandy, Duke, and Wake Forest included. But Walker Merrill, he is committed to Tennessee's in the class of 2021. When asked why, the first two words he said was, it's home, talking about UT and committing to Jeremy Pruitt. So Walker Merrill, Brentwood High School, just committed and is the second commitment in 2 days now of the 2021 class. Isaiah Gaddy, the player I mentioned from Pennsylvania, he's actually a late addition to the 2020 class for Tennessee. Oh. So he'll join the team immediately whenever they reconvene.
Any relation to Big Daddy?
To Big Daddy?
Big Daddy Gaddy?
Isaiah Gaddy.
Oh, no. I don't believe so. He's in Pennsylvania. So maybe he'll be interviewed and give an interview for an upcoming Steve McNair documentary series.
Nate Washington is coming up. Before we talk football, let's talk COVID-19 and news you can use with David Reed. What's the latest locally, Reed?
So earlier today, the mayor's press conference in the State of Metro address, they did address the COVID situation in Nashville and Davidson County. Those numbers for today, an increase of 98 cases overnight. That brings the total number of cases in Davidson County up to 541. They have initiated the hotline that they initiated last week for the COVID hotline for Davidson County. That number is 615-862-7777. If you think you're having symptoms of the coronavirus, they're asking you to call this hotline first. It's open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. That in conjunction with the new healthcare systems assessment centers that have opened up throughout the community. Two of those opened up on Monday. Those are located at Nissan Stadium and Meharry Medical College, and one will open up tomorrow at the former Kmart building on Murfreesboro Road. That's 2491 Murfreesboro Road. So if you think you're living in Davidson County and have symptoms of the COVID-19 virus, they want you to call 615-862-7777. Again, that operates from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. They will evaluate you over the phone as far as your symptoms go. And Monday, Wednesday, or Friday, if they believe that you do need a test, they would direct you to one of those community centers. Again, that's Nissan Stadium, Meharry Medical College, and the former Kmart building beginning tomorrow at 2491 Murfreesboro Road.
I'm curious how many people have it, pretty much know they have it, but are not even going to go get a test or try if the symptoms aren't too severe. I know someone personally who pretty sure they had it, and about 12 days into what they thought was allergies, called, and they said, you're already 12 days through, so if you don't have severe symptoms, there's no need to take the test. And now someone in their household is getting the same symptoms and sickness and is not going to bother taking a test, is just going to quarantine themselves for 14 days and stay inside. So this is data that we're seeing, and these are all confirmed positive tests of people that have gone out and received the test. I am curious what the real number looks like of people that either have symptoms and don't know they have it, or just pretty much know they have it but don't want to go through the process of testing if they're not severe.
I want to pass along that the CMA Fest for this year has been canceled, according to event organizers. This is something that comes up in June. It has been canceled, not postponed, but canceled. And those who have already purchased four-day passes, those will be honored for the CMA Fest 2021. If you want refunds, they offer those as well through Ticketmaster or the CMA Fest box office. Otherwise, you need to contact other sellers directly if purchased from another vendor. But again, the four-day purchasers, if you've done that, you'll get an email on how you can obtain the pass for 2021 or receive a refund. But again, CMA Fest 2020 canceled. That affects Greg Cosell. Greg was coming into town for that. He will no longer be traveling to Nashville for the CMA Fest.
Of the many things that concern me here, and thankfully, Dr. Bill Schaffner will join us again tomorrow. We're lucky enough to be visiting with him weekly, and he does a lot to
11:15 tomorrow
allay some concerns and certainly educate us. I see more about non-elderly than I was hoping to see. I've got questions about that. I've got questions about how complicated ventilators are or are not to build and to get mainstreamed. And we'll take your questions.
Test.
Yeah. So we'll take your questions on top of ours. We've been talking amongst ourselves. We've got growing lists, and we'll be thorough with him. I think it's been some of our best work to pat ourselves on the back, not just what we're asking him, but getting him on a weekly basis. And you can look forward to that tomorrow.
Hashtag Dr. Bill. He answers all questions tomorrow at 11:15. So tomorrow will be Doug Matthews at 10:15, Dr. Bill Schaffner, 11:15, Greg Cosell, 12:15. Plus, we're going to hear from John Robinson and Mike Vrabel. When we come back, former Titan wide receiver Nate Washington joins the show. It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
From Titans free agency to the draft, no one beats zone coverage. 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone with Chad Withrow and Paul Koharski. I'm Jonathan Hutton. Pleased to be joined by former Titans wide receiver Nate Washington. He's a two-time Super Bowl champion with Pittsburgh Steelers, and he's nice enough to join us now. Paul, I would describe him towards the end of his tenure, and there's very few players that sign a six-year contract and finish that contract with an NFL team, but towards the end of the tenure, there was a misconception that Nate was like a locker room malcontent. You remember this saga? We had just started the show, and you and I were like, there is no way that this is going on behind the scenes. And so we had Nate on to discuss it.
I vaguely remember that. I always remember saying that 6-year thing. I mean, it's nobody signs a 6-year deal in the league and plays out the contract. Right. And I don't think there was a renegotiation in there at all. Was there, Nate?
Oh, I think he may have his. Does he have his microphone muted?
Check your mic, Nate.
You good? You got
there.
It.
You go.
There we go. Yeah, no, good now.
But never any renegotiation. I think suitably so. There was a little rocky period there, you know. But you know, to be honest, being accountable, you know, I always wasn't the best type of person. You know, I definitely had to do a lot of self-reflection and a lot of conversations with Steve Watterson just, you know, kind of put me in a different frame of mind to kind of turn the new leaf, you know, and try to be a different guy. So, you know, thankfully so, they stuck with me for the 6 years and gave me the opportunity, and hopefully I've proven proud, you know, set establishment of what that room was supposed to look like.
You mentioned Watterson. Did you have your first child while you were playing with the Titans?
Yes, I did.
I've heard that he gave every player that had a kid with the Titans a manly-looking baby bag.
I still have that.
Said, here's a reason for you to have no excuse for pitching in with your wife or your girlfriend to do your part. Tell us the story that Steve Watterson about him sitting down with you and talking, giving you that back.
To be honest with you, probably like the first 3 years I was there, you know, we were close, you know, we all had a relationship with Coach Watterson just because of how much we interacted with him. But I don't think our relationship was nowhere near, honestly, where it was at by the time I left, because we had began to have personal conversations where I would sit down in a room with him and just close the door and we just talk about everything, about life. You know, it wasn't just about football, you know, it was about life. And at the time that I was having my daughter, you know, he was a huge advocate on making sure that I knew what the situation I was getting myself into. So when I had her, he called me in the office, sat me down, pulled this bag out of nowhere, and I was looking at it like, what is this thing? It only had one strap, so I guess that's what made it cool. It was like a more so like an overlay type of duffel bag type of thing. And he was like, you know, open it up. And I looked in it, it had all type of bottles and everything, you know. What is this? He was like, you know, just make sure you're doing everything you can at home. And to this day, whenever I see Coach Watterson, he asks about my daughters. He asks about how things are going with my fatherhood. And then we get into football. So he was that type of influence on my life.
Titans are not a team, you knew this firsthand for 6 years, that developed their own. That's why you were a necessary guy. Wide receivers, I think they drafted 29, I counted, from Derek Mason to A.J. Brown, where none of those guys turned into what the Titans were looking for as a long-term solution. You buying that A.J. Brown is going to be what we saw? And what's a reasonable expectation that you know the fan base is like, A.J. Brown's going to catch 1,500 yards, going to catch 100 balls, going to have 18 touchdowns. What's reasonable to expect for him in a second year with Ryan Tannehill now?
I think when I analyze a receiver position for myself, just playing it, I understand it's more mental than anything. A lot of guys have drops and can't get separation because they don't either understand the game or they're looking down on themselves in their career or the position that they're in. That plagues their play. With that being said, you know, I look at a guy that has come from Ole Miss. He, you know, respectively, he was in the shadow of the Metcalf kid, you know, throughout the draft process. And to be more successful than him his rookie year shows the wherewithal and the confidence within himself and his game to not worry about who's talking about him or who's paying him any attention, but just to go to work. And when you have a guy like that, the sky's the limit. Now, being reasonable, I can see him being a 1,000-yard, you know, 10-touchdown guy, you know, especially, you know, if this offense comes back and is rolling in the run game like it's been this year. I think the play-action game will get better with Ryan understanding and being able to move forward with those things. It all depends on how they were being able with this virus right now, how they're being able to work in the offseason. I think that's going to be very detrimental on them taking their game to the next level and seeing if they're going to continue to grow off what they did last year with him and AJ, because he's going to need Ryan. It's not going to be a situation where we're just looking at, you know, AJ as, is he going to expand his game? He's definitely going to need Ryan to become better, you know, make better throws, even though he's been outstanding, and continue to grow with the receiver core that he already has in place.
Corey Davis is not a terrible player. He's just not a player that was, you know, you're expecting Julio Jones when you draft a guy fifth in the league. And the first thing that the Titans praise about him, and fairly so, is that he's a great downfield blocker. But again, not what you're looking for when you draft a receiver fifth overall. None of us are expecting that he gets his fifth-year option exercised, so we're expecting this is his last year. What do you think's gone wrong for him, or was he just overdrafted? And do you think he winds up somewhere else being an efficient number two receiver? Is he more number three? What's your assessment of him?
I think he's definitely a talented guy. We've seen him make some plays, especially I can recall the New England playoff game a couple years ago where he definitely came in and made some outstanding plays. But here's the thing that we're talking about when you're talking about a fifth pick of the draft. It's the consistency, you know, the consistency to be there every Sunday, to be the dominant guy every Sunday, to be the guy that the other team has to worry about in the passing game. And that's where you're expecting out of a guy picked fifth. But that does not mean he does not add value. You know, it's in a system that like the Titans, where it's based on the run, based on the ground and pound first, and everything is predicated off play action for the receivers a lot of times. It gives him an opportunity to make plays, but not necessarily have to be the guy that the offense is relying on to you know, march down the field and score touchdowns. Here's the thing, though. You know, when you get towards that third, fourth year as a player, you know, those things, I tell a lot of guys, those things that they feel about you in the beginning and those promises that they make to themselves about where they draft you and what they expect of you begin to show fruition. You have to be that guy by that time. There is no more potential guy. There is no more what he's able to be able to grow into by third or fourth year. And if you're not at that level that they want to be, that they want you to be at, then they'll start reassessing their roster for what it is. And he's in that position. You know, this is definitely a huge year for him coming up. I think he is. I think his game has shown that he is an excellent number two. Maybe he was in a position where, unfortunately, he was drafted a little too high, but that's not his decision to make. You know, he's coming and doing everything that he can to make sure that he's doing, you know, growing as he sees fit. And unfortunately, he was just put in a position of high expectation. And I don't think it's not that he's living up to it. I think it's just that he fits a different void that they were expecting him to fill in the initial position.
Nate, we recently had Ramon Foster on the show after he announced his retirement from the Steelers, and he spent his entire career there in Pittsburgh, and he talked glowingly about the Rooney family and the ownership structure and how it's a family feeling there with the Pittsburgh Steelers. There are clearly haves and have-nots in the NFL historically. You played for the Steelers. You know the amount of championships they've won, the structure that they have in place there. Obviously, the Patriots. Now the dynasty in the NFL. If I had to describe the Titans Oilers franchise, it's close to being a have-not historically, but probably somewhere in the middle between the haves and the have-nots. You've experienced both sides of this. What's the biggest difference between, let's say, the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Tennessee Titans? Is it ownership that's in place? Is it a mindset of players when they get there? What is the biggest difference since you've lived inside of both of those organizations?
Well, I'll say this, like, it starts at the head. That was the biggest difference for me coming from Pittsburgh and getting to Tennessee. This was one of my heavy topics talking with the players when, you know, players would come and we would, you know, be around chilling somewhere or hanging out, and they will express their discern or concern about the organization and what they felt that we were lacking and those things. And that would be the number one place that I would start off at. You know, when I was in Pittsburgh, we seen Mr. Rooney every single day. We seen him every day. You know, he walked through the locker room every single day while we were in there. You know, When Ben went through his tragedy and the team was trying to find in a motorcycle accident and the team was trying to find a way to bounce back from that, it was Mr. Rooney that walked into the locker room as a joke with a designed motorcycle helmet to make everybody laugh. You know, from there, we just moved forward. It was Mr. Rooney, the dad, you know what I'm saying? So to get to an organization now, you know, and although I really feel like Bud Adams at the time, he really cared for the organization, but it was more so a competitive thing for him. It was more so this is my dog in the fight and you have your dog. And we not to, you know, excuse the dog fighters, not to make it seem that way, but
you're fine.
We know what you're saying.
It was was just that type of thing for Bud. It was a competition. It was a hobby for him. You know, he showed up when the big money was on the line. And when we obviously when we were playing the Texans, and he was involved then. But the day-to-day basis, his absence was just missing. You know, and that within itself, it kind of leaves the organization's foundation up in the air. You know, and a lot of guys don't take the organization itself as serious as it would be taken with a much more involved owner as it did with Mr. Rooney. So it was a lot of situations where the absence of Bud a lot of times kind of conflicted with, you know, what kind of team we wanted to be, what type of organization we wanted to be. It was a lot of times that I felt that I wish that we would do more in the community and those things, but it was just missing. And, you know, the more and more we got a new owner with Mr. Tommy at the time, well, not necessarily new owner. They were the same owners, but just a different face. And, you know, I just seen the anguish in his face. You know, he understood that the organization where it should wasn't, he understood that his hands were tied in a lot of ways. And it was unfortunate for him, you know. So to see what Amy has done now, you know, I think that this is the ownership and this is the organization now that is playoff contending year in, year out, structurally sound, and with the understanding of incoming rookies to understand what this organization is about because of what Mrs. Amy Shrunk has done moving forward with her presence.
Nate Washington is with us. All of that well said. I coming up, Nate, we love old stories and reminiscing.
Oh, yeah.
We just saw Tom Brady go to Tampa Bay. And I'm curious from your perspective, a year after you joined the Titans in free agency, Peyton Manning's on the move. And he visits with the Titans. There's an opportunity as a wide receiver that you're thinking, maybe I'm playing with Peyton Manning next season. I want to get your take on what that was like in March of 2012 when he's making his decision, and put yourself in the seat of what Tampa Bay must be feeling right now because they have the guy, the GOAT, coming right to play for them. Nate Washington with us on the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
Doug Matthews talks college football with Charles Davis every Saturday at 10:15. Presented by Star Physical Therapy. Part of Forklift Systems Football Saturday on 104.5 The Zone.
Nate Washington, our guest on the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. You can follow Nate on Twitter at NWash85 is where you can find him. And we just saw the GOAT, Tom Brady, who you briefly had a chance to play with, Nate, go to Tampa Bay, something we should always expect that the greats are going to end somewhere else, but it's still difficult to fathom that he's not going to play in New England. But we also saw that with Peyton Manning, where he leaves Indy after being released with the neck injury, makes the visits. One of those was here in Nashville while you were a Titan in 2012. I'm curious from your perspective what that was like, especially at your position, coming from Pittsburgh, playing with Roethlisberger, and then having the in your mind thinking that you may have the chance to play with Manning.
Oh, man, it was ecstatic. You know, I definitely really recall, you know, hearing the opportunity of possibly receiving Peyton at the time. And I was, you know, approached with, you know, his ties to Knoxville and everything that was going on with his Tennessee connection. And, you know, me being a receiver at the time, definitely my eyes just lit up. You know, the opportunity to play with one of the best quarterbacks to ever put on a helmet, you know, that's definitely an opportunity for me to get better as well. You know, so it was definitely excitement at the time. But, you know, you never know. You know, it's just like the situation with Tom. You know, nobody ever really expected or imagined him leaving New England. You know, even with the things that were said leading up to it, you know, I still was, you know, advocate of, I think I actually even tweeted about it, you know, everybody's so frantic only for him to sign back with New England in 2 weeks. You know, I just knew that he would be going back, you know. So when you see a guy like this actually leave, and the caliber of everything he's accomplished in that one place and the time he spent actually is just amazing to see him leave. But, you know, I also ironically had the opportunity to be in Tampa interning last year, so as a coach. So this is ideal for those guys. You know, I've actually reached out to a couple of guys, and I've tried my best to leave the coaching staff alone, you know, and allow them to settle in. But I'm very excited for Coach Bruce Arians. As you know, he was my receivers coach my rookie year. I played ball with Brian Leftwich, which was on my Pittsburgh team. And me and him have a strong connection. So him as him being an offensive coordinator and having the opportunity to work with one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play our game, I'm excited for him. I know the receivers coaches, Kevin Carver and Antoine Randall-Leal. I know those guys are ecstatic, and I know the receivers and the tight ends in the room. I know everyone is just happy about the opportunity to play with a guy that understands the game and can spin it. You know, he throws a great ball still at this age. I know his age is questioned, and Father Time is undefeated. But when you have a guy like this, you can't pass him up, man. He definitely still brings value to your team.
According to the reports, Brady, in the 90-minute conversation with the Buccaneers by phone, wanted to know not about – they weren't talking money. Money was already predetermined. He wanted to know what are the receivers and the playmakers like off the field? Are they good dudes? And what's their work ethic like on the practice field? What are the receivers in for with Brady joining that room and joining the practice field?
He's meticulous, man. He's a worker. You know, I'll never forget, you know, one of the practices that we had in the spring up in New England, and I was kind of winded. You know, we've had multiple two-minute drills within the practice, and we had did a lot of running, and we had some running after practice. And typically, you know, especially being an older guy at the time. I think I was about 32, 33 years old. I was in the 12th year of my career. And typically, guys, you know, they take it easy on those guys a little bit, you know, trying to give them the rest with their bodies, understanding that their body's not going to be the same as an incoming rookie. And he came right over to me, just was like, hey, you want to put in some extra work? And I mean, who am I to turn down the GOAT? You know what I'm saying? So I had to go right over there with him and put that work in. But he understood that if me and him were going to be together, that it was going to take more work than just practice. It was going to take more work than just the required time from the team for us to be there. So therefore, I was going to have to put more work in with him off the field and, you know, after practice. And that's what, you know, where my expectation went. I wanted to work and do whatever I could, you know, to make sure he know I could be reliable and that I was there for the same thing that he was there for. Unfortunately, it didn't work out for me with the team. But, you know, understanding what type of guy this is, he works his butt off, man. No matter how good he is, he's good that way because he didn't wake up and was naturally able to jump high and run fast and do those things. He worked at his talent. And because of that work, he's considered one of the best that ever played a game.
You know, we've talked to people who have played with Brady, and we get some different accounts of this. Is he a difficult guy to get along with off the football field? I know you're not spending a lot of time probably hanging out with him, but just in the locker room or around the facility, is he one of those guys you don't even approach? Listen, or is he friendly enough around the facility?
Listen here. Let me give you a quick Tom Brady story that's going to put you in a frame of mind what type of guy this is. So when I get there to New England, it's his locker. I'm sitting to the left of him, directly to the left of him. LeGarrette Blount is sitting to the left of me. And then I think it was James White was sitting next to him, right? So one day we come in and we're sitting there. It's a morning time. And typically, you know, morning guys, especially older guys, they don't want to be bothered. You know, we get in there, you know, we want to relax. You know, we get in the flow of our day and those things. Tommy came in this day. He sat down. He leaned up. He looked down at LeGarrette Blount. He said, hey, what you doing? Turn the music on. And it wasn't the music, like, no offense, but this wasn't the music that I was expecting. Like, they put on some Kodak Black, and he was over there. Like, he came from where I was from, and I was not expecting this. This is the real Tom Brady. I went to a cookout at Julian Edelman's house. I just knew, you know, it was going to be receivers, you know, maybe a couple other guys that stopped by. And I had went, I went in the afternoon not knowing, like, Julian had told me to be there at, I think it started at 2:00. So I'm like, you know, I'm new to the team. I want to make sure that these guys, you know what I'm saying? You know, I'm a cool guy. I want to fit in. I want to make sure that they know I don't want to shortchange them. So I showed up at like 2:30. I'm like, cool. I show up at like 2:30. It's in the spring. So, you know, we're cooking. He's got friends over from Boston. We're having a good time. We're having drinks. So it starts getting later. It's like 5:00. I'm like, you know what? I can't hang no more. Like, I'm getting older. I can't do it no more. I'm finning myself. I'm going to go ahead and call my car and go ahead on back to the hotel. Right when I was walking out, I had just told everybody goodbye. Just knew I was safe. I showed my love. Everybody should know that Nate's a cool guy. Reach for the handle. Tommy walks in. Where are you going? Shots on me. I said, oh. Take it. This guy is one of the most humble celebrities that I've ever met. You know, as much as you see him on your TV, you know, you can sit down and you can be yourself with him. He's very accepting. He's not judgmental. He's a guy of the people, man, to be honest with you. Everybody that interacts with him, I see rookies walk up to him and have jokes and laugh with him. And him walk up to guys that may not, other guys on the team may not talk to. Not that that happens often, but he relates and reacts with those guys just as he does Julian Edelman. You know, this is, I know it's a huge theory out there with them being best friends, but Tom Brady is a good guy and just a cool dude to be around, to be honest.
Did you ever see Belichick let his guard down the way Brady would?
Honestly, I did. I did one time, and I went back to the room, and I think I called everybody in my phone.
One time. What was it? Tell us that story.
I seen him break his wall down, man. We actually, the story is even more funny. So we're doing like a team bonded thing, and we're in the team. It was after an OTA practice, and we normally have team meetings in the team meeting room. But this day, he told us to get up and everybody to go to the locker room. And we, like, the players that had been there before had knew, I guess they had knew what was going on, but I obviously didn't have a clue what was going on. And so we get in the locker room, and they have like garbage cans set up that are far enough from away from each other. They're playing basketball on, right? So he matches up the teams, right? Puts a coach, two coaches on each team. So we go through the thing. He makes a wager of it. I think it was wager was like offense didn't have to run the next day if they won or whatever the wager was or it may be. So, you know, the event goes on. Everybody's having a good time enjoying themselves and all this. I think we ended up losing. Offense ends up losing. But they ended up persuading Bill to take a couple shots. When I tell you, I've never seen this man smile like this, attempting these basketball shots, because his shot was so weird that, like, I couldn't even laugh at the time. My jaw was dropped in more astonishment to see him having as much fun as he was having. I didn't think it was possible, but he had a great time. You know, he's a serious, you know, I also played with Coach Bill Cowher. And everybody knows his face as well. But his is a poker face. He's one of the coolest guys to be around. Bill Belichick is that guy, though. You walk up to Bill and passing Bill in the hallway. Hey, Coach Belichick. Hey. And he keeps it moving. You're not going to get a conversation. If you get a conversation, it's him talking to you about corrections from practice the day before. That's the only conversation you're going to get. Other than that, he's going to keep on his way. I've seen him smile a couple times, but, you know, I don't think he's approachable like Tom is. Just say that. If you're not talking football, you're not talking nothing but Bill.
Chad, you'll remember this. Remember was it the Randy Moss 30 for 30, or it was a Patriots documentary on NFL films, maybe, where they have Moss pitching the Halloween costume idea to Belichick in his office, and he goes to the skating rink and he shows up in costume with his wife.
Yes. I forget what that was, but I remember seeing that.
Yes.
That's Bill Belichick behind the scenes that people don't realize what he's like in certain settings.
Hey, Nate, with the poker face.
Yes. Hey, how would you, so in 2005, you go undrafted out of Tiffin. Given the coronavirus climate that we're in, where everyone's confined to their own space, how would you go about getting noticed this time of year? If you were in the setting now, knowing that you're on the verge of either going undrafted or like a sixth or seventh round pick, because give or take a couple of teams, a player that feels he's going in the sixth could end up being undrafted. How do you keep your name out there? What are you doing?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you, man. Mine is, you know, as much as I can give you strategic process about what happened, I was just blessed, man. I was definitely blessed by the grace of God. You know, As you stated, I went to Tiffin University, so my opportunity to be noticed definitely wasn't that high. Nobody had been to the NFL prior to me. I think a guy by the name of Willie Spencer actually had an opportunity and a tryout with the Redskins, I think 2 years before I had got in college, but he didn't make it. So the ability to be recognized for at my school by just being there wasn't going to happen. You know, I definitely had to be making some noise. I'll say this, that at the time, I didn't think about the NFL. I thought about, you know, just not going home to Toledo. That was more important to me. Making it to the NFL, I thought was so far-fetched that I didn't really take it seriously. I didn't really take it like, okay, well, this is an opportunity for you. So for me, just the competition end of it was everything that I had being at Tiffin, you know. And with that being said, it allowed me to go out and play the game competitively enough to make marks, to just be recognized by NFL scouts and that type of atmosphere for them to come be intrigued by me enough my senior season to come to a couple games, because I don't think there would be nothing at this time that I could do, to be honest, to answer your question. Besides the film that I had, you know, there wasn't nothing, you know, that I was going to be able to accomplish in this period of time, not having combine invite. My pro day was actually at a YMCA because it had rained my pro day and we didn't have an indoor facility. So I ended up doing my pro day during the elders walking time. YMCA, you know what I'm saying? So like, this was not a situation where I was set up to, you know, showcase my ability, showcase my talent ever, you know. So especially with the virus going on and all of the quarantine and confinement that we had, I really would have had to sit back and allow a team to watch my film in hopes that they would recognize me enough to, you know, give me a chance, because I don't think there'll be most pro days will probably be canceled at this time due to the virus, those type of things. So only thing that they have to operate and work off of is the combine, you know, attendance and those showcases.
Nate, thank you so much, man. You've always been really good to us, and hopefully we can catch up like this. Sounds like we're going to be doing this for at least another month via Skype. Hey, so
once a week, man, fill me in right after the coronavirus guy, man. I'm in.
Okay.
Terrific. Thanks so much. That's a lot of fun. This is the just on the Belichick Brady stories.
Yeah, let's pick out a former teammate and let's tell stories, your interactions with them each week. That'd be a blast.
That's great. Sounds good. Pin me in, guys.
All right. Enjoy Atlanta. Nate Washington checking in from ATL there. More coming. Midday on 80, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
The 3HL takes the handoff at 2. Now, more nonstop sports talk with the Midday 180 on 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. John McClain's going to join us in about 10 minutes. Great conversation there with former Titans wide receiver Nate Washington, who has so many more stories, and he'll be rejoining us from time to time as we sit in quarantine. Great storytellers on today with David Ewing, Nate Washington, and soon to be John McClain on deck. The headline that we'll hit with John first, the NFL clubs have approved the expansion of the postseason. I had someone send me a message and ask, is this for 2021? No, this is for this year. The expansion of the postseason will be in effect this year. Instead of 12 teams, 14 teams will get into the postseason, 7 from each conference.
I don't know why it's being played like there was doubt about this. I mean, the moment the CBA is approved, this was happening. It's not like some owner was going to go, hey, you know what? We should wait 2 years before. No, they wanted this. This is a big financial gain that got it in the CBA agreement. This was going to be green lighted. This was a little bit of a discussion about the logistics and the implementation. This was not like a big mystery going into this. This was a done deal the moment the CBA vote came in.
Do we know what? So CBS and NBC are picking up the extra games.
Yes.
So we'll have the triple header on the 2 days. Do we know what they've paid for this?
I don't think those details are out. And I don't think Monday night is a possibility here at the outset. It's 3-3 Saturday and Sunday.
That's what they've announced.
At the beginning of this.
Because it's going to be on Saturday, January 9th and Sunday, January 10th. Three games each day. Wild card weekend 2020.
So if the Titans are in it, more games for us to miss.
Yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it. There's also a more opportunity for us to talk about the Titans in the postseason, right? You run it back, you should be among the seven best teams in your conference.
Yeah, and the NFL, another report out from Gary Myers, New York-based Gary Myers, friend of the show who's been on with us, the chief presenter of Kevin Mawai's Hall of Fame case, who I followed up in the Hall of Fame selection committee meeting. He says that the league still plans to play a 16-game season with the possibility a delayed start if that's what's required. And I don't think we'd expect them to say anything more. And I don't think there's any danger. The NFL has long kind of, I think, looked at February as kind of a month it could own if it so chose, right? February is a dead month. There's been talk for a while about backing a 17-game schedule plus the extra playoffs. If it became an extra weekend, NFL could get to President's Day as being the Monday after the Super Bowl. I don't think the NFL would have any problem getting the Super Bowl to the end of February. And it would have no problem going into March if it wanted to, but February would be easy.
Can you imagine if President's Day is the day after Super Bowl Sunday every year, where you have a holiday built in to the game itself?
We're not given the option of having President's Day off anymore, I'll tell you that. Chad, would you like to take President's Day off? Would we get that memo?
Yeah, I don't think that'll be the case. I think it'll be a memo saying, hey, guys, the Super Bowl happened the night before, so we will be on air on President's Day.
Okay, the Super Bowl happened, but then there's no one listening to Sports Talk Radio on the holiday.
Hey, because they're sleeping.
Right.
That's what I always –
that's a big Tuesday show.
I'm always amazed about the Labor Day, the idea of the Labor Day Sports Talk Show.
Yeah.
And the theory was always that was presented to us was, guys, there's plenty to talk about. It's the opening weekend of college football. And I'm always – my response to that was always, yes, there's no shortage of things to talk about. The problem is there's no audience to share this information
with.
They'll
be there Tuesday as well.
On Labor Day. They're going to be there on Tuesday because no one is in their normal routine or listening to what they normally listen to on Labor Day. So we're just talking to ourselves at that point with all of this great info to take in from over the weekend.
Let's run it back on Tuesday.
We run it back with John McClain on Tuesdays. He's about to join us. And, Chad, that means our phone lines are open to talk NFL headlines, playoff expansion, free agency, draft. It's all on the table.
And phone lines are open for you. Whatever question you want to ask John McClain all across the NFL, he can answer them coming up next at 615-737-1045, 737-1045.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.